Thanks very much for doing Art Focus in person, Philip.
Happy we could get together. It's been a long time since I've been on KBOO because I've been away from Portland, but I love it.
All right.
Big, oh, where big have you fan been? Of community radio on KBOO. And years ago, let's see, in the 90s, I was working with an arts organization in Portland, and we did every project that we did was on the radio in some form, so we did a lot of shows. Did a lot of fundraising for KBOO too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, thank you very much. By the way, listeners, we're still fundraising, so you're not going to get away with that. So Building 5 is this big warehouse type building by Montgomery Park, and it just opened after like a year of, you know, like rewiring and painting and getting ready and subdividing. So they're going to have a different artist sort of every 6 weeks build something in that space and then show it off to the public.
Yeah.
So the space is open and the first artist in there is you, Philip, and your piece is called Auxart, which is spelled A-U-X-A-R-T. So before I tell people what it looks like, just tell us what Auxart means.
Well, the idea behind Auxart was that I wanted to do some projects that where I was creating an amplification for other creative voices through the work that I was doing. So not exclusively just creating a backdrop or a stage, creating a sculptural environment, but that a big part of that would be that other people could plug their work into it. And so in this case, most literally, it became sound artists being able to plug in and create an overlay into the environment. But in theory, a lot of other disciplines could be occupying that space, and maybe before we're done, I don't know.
But. Yeah. So aux is like, A-U-X is the aux.
It's like the auxiliary port in a, yeah.
Right, and that's the thing, like my kids, wherever they go, they're like, what's the Wi-Fi password and where's the aux?
Right.
You know, because they want to plug in.
Well, and I also have heard lately that the aux is the person in a dance setting who controls the set that's being played because they plug their playlist in. So that's interesting too. It's saying, hey, you have the floor, we're now doing your vibe.
Oh, okay. Like so, a DJ or like a sort
or
of
DJ, or if you're at a party, it can just be somebody that's got a good playlist. So.
Oh, really? The aux person. Okay. So you go into this space now, and it's free, but the hours are limited. So you go in, and it's just this... You see this big wooden, it looks just like a bird's nest. It's a sort of cylinder, but oval shaped, and it tapers slightly towards the top. And it's made up of wood, lots and lots of strips of wood, very long, I mean 10, 20 feet long, all different widths, colors, and they're bound together by black rubber, which is bicycle tires. And this oval is, I mean, it's really big. How big is it? Like 40 feet long at its longest?
Yeah.
And you can enter it through a hole, small hole. You creep in, and then inside there are big cushions you can lie down or sit down and listen to the sound. So it's a environment with a soundscape that changes. When I look at it, I think bird's nest immediately. What do you see when you look at it?
I don't know that I am able to distance myself enough from making it to know what it looks like particularly. I think the thing that I try to do is to not so much direct people towards something that I or to control what's being seen as to try to eliminate the things that I don't want seen. And part of the great thing about that space is that, and doing something really big in it, is that it's a cube, essentially, the space. It's 60 by 60 by 60. And so if you build something that's 40 feet wide by 16 or more feet high, then you can't really ever see the whole thing. And I like that it's kind of a curved monolith from the outside, and that then you enter a completely different environment on the inside. was interesting in the beginning when it started going up, and the top was battered kind of over and in more, and it sort of begged people that were seeing it to think of it as something that was going to be a dome. So that was an interesting thing. A dome would have been kind of an obvious, more solid structure, kind of easier to make in a way.
Mm-hmm.
But again, we would have had to use the lift, and I'm just really grateful that I didn't go that direction with it, because it's just stays more open.
Right. So just to clarify, you go in and it is it's a cylinder, like a low cylinder. The top is open, but it is kind of egg-shaped. Oval shaped.
It's elliptical, yeah.
Yeah, and the top kind of tapers in a bit. And it's sort of see-through because the weaving is not complete. So the scale of all the pieces of wood is different. It's just, you can look endlessly at the lines, the shapes, the way the light's coming through it. I guess it's contemplative, or it's just beautiful. You just do want to look at it for a long time. And, you know, somebody pointed out, oh, it's just like the Belgian waffle at Burning Man in 2006.
Ooh, that's a great compliment.
And then, to me, it looked like the Bird's Nest Stadium in China for the Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
So is there something about that weaving in a circle that is structurally efficient?
Yes, definitely. It's hard to know. You know, part of my thing is that I don't really like to use hardware. And so relying as much as I can on friction and gravity and stacking and layering is what I like to do. I discovered over time that I just don't like noise a lot. So if you're using a nail gun, for example, which is a great tool for getting things up quickly, you always have to hear the compressor going, and then you always have to be dragging this hose around and up and down a lift. So I just kind of accepted some limitations that have been guiding what happened. So with the start of this project, I didn't know I was going to be doing any weaving. It was a 9-week residency. I had an absolute enormous amount of wood that I had collected that was in all different dimensions. And the question was, how am I going to assemble this and into what? So the weaving kind of took over when I went to the shape that was based on the symmetry of the room and wanting to address the ceiling, wanting to go up. And once it started, I made these big hoops and we built these temporary supports for them and put them at different angles. Like you take a bunch of rings and put them at different angles, kind of like the rings of Saturn going around. On different axes, and then tied them off, and then started building on that with diagonals. And once it became semi-structural, then a kind of a weaving process began, and it really just took off. I don't know that I was intending to start that way. And then it just becomes very meditative, trying to figure out how to weave the stiff wood can only bend so far, and the flimsy wood can maybe bend too much, and so you just fool around with it and keep working at it and adding to it. And we literally went until we didn't have any more wood that could bend enough to go in the piece.
Right.
And then everything else we, you know, cast off into other avenues of the waste stream. So.
Mm-hmm. So you got all this strip, what do you call that, wood rip?
Yeah, rips. They came off of a machine that cuts a piece of wood that's kind of imprecisely comes in from the original mill and gets cut with a straight line to make it so that then they can tool it, run it through a shaper or do any other thing. So there are a lot of bits that come off of that process. Yeah, so I collected a whole mess of them, and we kind of went through them.
Did you know what you were going to do when you were collecting?
No, I didn't.
But you knew about the space.
I knew about the space, okay. And I knew that was the material I wanted to work with.
Yeah, right.
I just didn't know how it was going to go together.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, up until probably 2 weeks into it, I wasn't completely sure.
Oh, wow.
One of the things that I discovered about Building 5, and this was the sort of trailblazing get-to-know-it project for the space was that it's pretty busy in there. There are a lot of people coming and going. And so a residency is typically a setting where you have a little bit more privacy and a chance to scratch your head and experiment and try things out. And much as I did do that, I was also working at a pretty big scale, which means I had already hired a couple people to help me, particularly James, who you interviewed. And so, you have to scratch your head while somebody's waiting patiently for you to make a decision. And when people are walking by saying, what are you going to do? What's going to be? When's it going to open? When's it going to be done? So it's just kind of processing all that. And, and I think that put the heat on to make it settle, find a direction pretty quickly, which is great. Yeah, it was helpful, I think, in many ways.
I talked to James while I was in there. He was showing, he's a PNCA student who was showing his friends around, and this is what James had to say.
My name is James Houghton. I'm currently a PNCA student. My main job was working on cutting a lot of bike tires so we could use them to lash the sculpture together, the large piece in the center. I also spent a lot of time setting up the banding and doing a lot of ladder work and some weaving as well. I got to help a lot with building the actual physical sculpture, so it was a great experience and a super fun time.
How was the structure made, and how did you need scaffolding?
Yeah, so it originally started with us setting up a couple of like braces around the outside of the structure. And once we set those up and established the perimeter, we started creating larger loops. And those are the only full loops in the whole structure. So there's three full connected circles that establish the height and the circumference. And then from there, we continued building upwards and using different Philip had also sewed these bags together that we used as weights to be able to kind of maneuver the circle and adjust angles. And so from there, we basically went up ladders and continued to build up. And so the height of our ladders kind of established our max height. And we didn't want to use power tools and have to use the crane and the lifts. So we decided to just establish it at about, I want to say 20 feet, and the 15 foot ladder was probably the highest ladder we were using. And so once we got a lot of structure in, we were able to start weighing more of the wing and so tying in all the major points that create a lot of structure within the sculpture.
Was it, as a piece of engineering, was it complicated?
Yes, it was extremely complicated. Initially, it started and we built this whole thing up and got it to a certain height and we pulled away. Philip had pulled away the beams that were holding it in place and it started to collapse and we hadn't anticipated that it needed a lot more structure initially. So we had to go back in and kind of troubleshoot some ways to be able to add more structure so it wouldn't collapse and it would be safe for people to go inside. And then also the doorway was another area that had to be really, had to be looked at a lot and made sure that people were going to be able to get in and out without it sinking or anything, because it's the only opening in a completely circular structure.
So the doorway is a kind of a weak point?
Yes, the doorway is definitely a weak point that we spent a lot of time reinforcing and doing a lot of extra tire tying and lashing. And if you look at it in the sculpture, it's a little bit denser with like the black inner tubes.
Do you think this piece will be used for anything else? Like, can you have a party here or anything in the next few weeks?
I think that this space may end up being used for a couple performances around potentially dance and music. I also think that it could definitely be a space that had a party or a live venue for musicians to be in or a show. I think this space has a lot of potential. It has a lot of feelings of, I mean, I've many people said Burning Man inspired, but you know, you can't burn it, obviously. So I think that it has endless potentials of people being inside and however you want to inhabit it, whether it's a space for, you know, meditative experience or it's a space for social engagement and interaction with others.
What would you do if you could do anything?
I'd probably throw a party. I think it would be cool to have a bunch of artists here and have people be able to interact with it and also have that social interaction that I think everybody's missing because of the pandemic and everything else. So I think that would be really great and just, you know, not like a party, but just like a way for people in the art world to be able to come and really engage with the people who worked on it and engage with it outside of it being also this like multifaceted sound and what's the right word? Sound, and I mean, you get smell, you get everything. It's a multi-sensory experience. So yeah, but I think it's being used great right now, and I think people should come and get to experience it when there's not a lot of people here, because there isn't a ton of people here. So you get to sit down and really enjoy the inside and experience the sound and the smell and the environment and everything else. So
would you keep the soundtrack for your party?
Yeah, I think the soundtrack is kind of a big part of it, but I think that maybe at a lower volume so you can have a conversation as well, because this some parts of the soundtrack are really meant to like kind of take you over, so it's almost like it's really meant to put you in an own meditative state. I'm from Portland, so I'm encouraging anybody that I know and is around me to come and see this and meet Philip and get to experience this.
The other piece of the work is a bunch of rags, bales of rags, sorted by color. Some of them are in bales, and some of them are scattered. What's all that about?
Different color, different texture. You asked me whether I knew what I was going to do, and I didn't. But whether I had, what I knew about the material before I got it, and I had to make some decisions in advance about what I was going to use. Because there just isn't enough time to, you know, all of a sudden arrange to get tons and tons of materials to work with, especially when you're working with salvage material. So I had to organize the rags in advance because I really, really love the way they look when they're sorted by color. You know, when they're all mixed, they just look like dirty laundry. And then when you color sort them, they're really, really rich. I mean, it's really an amazing depth of color.
Mm-hmm.
So I went and I took some color spectrums, the three groups, to the people that I was working with, and they just started amassing large amounts of rags. And the first color, and the reason that is the main color is orange, was that I felt like, especially given the times that we're in, the juxtaposition of wood with this spectrum of fire was something that I wanted to work with. And I think that the color is so important to the way that we read the visual world. And so putting a kind of symbolic reference for something that we associate with a given color and theoretically leads your imagination down a path that will open up different kinds of narratives for you depending on, you know, what you're seeing and feeling.
The idea is that different audio artists can plug in. They can come along, literally put their playlist on the laptop.
Well, so these guys, you know, they came to the project via different people that I've been working with. They're all local sound designers that work in everything from DJing to film production, and all levels of sound also in terms of working in 8-tracks or working in global sound and VR. And so they all have a completely different thing that they bring to it. And the first piece, which was Nick Corona and Alexander Nicodemus did, it was very electronic driven, very drony, super rich, takes you somewhere really intense and then opens up into something super spacious. And that was a little different than the one that you just heard, which is maybe it changes a lot. It's a little bit more storytelling. You're a little more familiar with the sounds. And then I don't know what's coming up is Seth Neal and Jesse Gay. And Seth works a lot with the dance community in Portland. And I don't know what he's bringing. And
you haven't heard it yet?
Haven't heard it yet.
Oh, wow.
And Jesse works all over the map with electronic sound and...
What have you told them are the limits, like 2 hours or concrete floors?
Well, they know that they've come out and tested the sound and looked at it and taken measurements or wandered around or studied the piece, whatever they need. And we've talked about it and talked about what we're both into or interested in. And we think we're what kind of experience we're interested in having people drop into, and then kind of off they go. There are really no limits. So it's a surprise to me, and it's exciting. It's fun.
You've got really good speakers. I mean, lots of speakers around the room, so you're never like straining to hear the sound, you know, and it's ambient. Do you think you'll have other sounds? Like, you know, will you have a party there? Will you have a dance performance? What else could happen?
I don't know yet. I would say yes. There are a couple of dancers that have reached out that are going to look at doing some things spontaneously next week. And
so that'd be the week of the 8th,
7th, and all the way through to the end, which is the 13th. And then I'm in conversation with a couple of people, one in the jazz community and one in the classical music community, about doing a couple little recital things. So we'll see. They'll be announced in some capacity, but the space can't really handle too much, so probably it'll be limited to their audiences if they do some little solo acoustic performances.
Yeah, so because of COVID and the shape of the structure, you couldn't have more than a few dozen?
We could do more than a few dozen, but okay. Let's just say the fire marshal hasn't checked the current conditions, so we wouldn't want to push it too hard. But we'll see what happens.
Yeah. And I did love that I didn't know you were sort of against power tools, you know, and you use...
I love power tools, don't get me wrong. I just don't like to use them all day long.
Right. But this is all bound together. So when I touch the work, some of the wood is just very loose. Some of it is rigid, you know, it's taking load. But all the rubber bindings were super hard and tight.
Yeah.
And what's going to happen at the end, you know?
Well, the bicycle inner tubes are just a great attachment lashing, and so because they stick to each other once you get them wrapped around a few times, so they're great tie downs for anything, and I've used them a bunch in just utility things. And so some things are loose because they don't have any binding to them, they're just woven in, but the early, more structural stuff is all bound pretty tightly so that the thing won't drop down. Because it's mostly horizontal leaning diagonals, and so the whole thing would sort of drop if we didn't hold it up. After the bicycle inner tubes come off, they'll be recycled along with, they're going to Les Schwab, and Les Schwab recycles them with all their tire recycling program.
Yeah.
So, and then a lot of the lashing will be still usable. We'll take it off and I'll keep it for future projects too.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah.
So how important was the sound element to you? Like, could you have done it if they said no sound, would you have bothered?
Sure. Definitely. But it was really, really fun. I want to create more experiential sculpture. And it's hard absent sound or absent some other sensory input to get people to sort of drop in a little bit more and out of their heads. We're very visual people, and we tend to immediately objectify and do an inventory of what we're seeing, and then kind of look at it, decide about it, cast judgment, categorize it, index it, move on. And so having the sound in there creates this big body that it floats in that throws you a little off guard, and I think it makes it so that you're less likely to talk, you're less likely to be able to think about a ton of other things or to try to immediately try to decide what it is. There's at least a minute, there's a gap that's being created to have a slightly more, you know, felt experience.
Yeah.
And
That's interesting, because like abstract art, you know, it's different if you live with it than if you just walk around a gallery. In the gallery, you've got to make your mind up pretty quick. If you stare at the same painting for years, you have a totally different approach.
Yeah.
So this thing of keeping people in there a bit longer and maybe taking away their rational mind a little bit.
Just for a second. And also, everybody's different. You know, that'll happen for some people, and it won't for others. But it was definitely you know, the intention behind finding the foam and making these slip covers all out of found stuff was so that you really could just hang out. And one of the things that I always feel in gallery and museum settings or white box art settings is that they're sort of alienating. I mean, just by intention almost, there's nowhere to hang out. And so it's sort of an invitation to hang out if you feel like it. The benches are a little formal. That was accidental. I mean, that was just some of the wood that I had loads of. So I was like, I'm going to bang together some benches. So, because I love sitting down on a bench in an art space and writing, or you can lie down on them or do whatever. So, yeah, that was what that was about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I must say, it's one of the most enjoyable pieces that I've encountered for years. I just really had a great time in there. And
well, good. Thanks for saying
more,
that.
More questions. That's my approach to art. My name's Joseph Gallivan. You've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week was Philip Crone. His piece, Ox Art, is on now at Building 5 in Northwest Portland, and that's through June 13th. Thank you so much for doing Art Focus outside in a noisy coffee shop by a park, Philip.
Thanks for having me on. I'm glad we're outside and next to the park.
Great.
Andy Warhol looks a scream. Hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen. Can't tell them apart at all.
Está sintonizando KBOO Portland en el 90.7 FM y a través de la internet en kboo.fm.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM. Hoy martes 8 de junio del 2021. Cientos de trabajadores de la salud que tratan a pacientes con COVID en todo el mundo han experimentado ataques verbales, físicos y a veces potencialmente mortales durante la pandemia, lo que provocó llamadas a la acción inmediata por parte de los activistas de derechos humanos. Se esperan que aumenten los ataques relacionados con el COVID contra los trabajadores de la salud a medida que las nuevas variantes causen estragos en países como la India y que los lanzamientos de programas de vacunación